And there's one rather interesting contradiction that is perhaps worth mentioning. Well, perhaps it's not a contradiction, but it relates to Don Pablo's attitude toward the classics and the attitude that is manifested in the Soviet Union. I find it of a special interest because Don Pablo himself has more than once been an outspoken critic of the Soviet Union. But at the same time, the attitude that is manifested in the Soviet Union toward art in general, not just music in particular, but art in general, is quite similar to this attitude of his. It is the attitude of the Soviet government, that art must be comprehensible and that art must communicate. Lenin and the Marxists regard art, of course, as a weapon. Now, I don't mean as a harmful weapon, but as an instrument which is to be used as a means of communication and also as a means of what they say is ennobling man. They have an instinctive, conditioned reflex against any form of art which they consider degrading. And some of their concepts of degrading are, I think, very accurate concepts. They regard certain comic books, I know, let us say, that we put out in the United States as a degrading form of art. Now, Casals also feels that music must play an ennobling function, and that in order to do that, it also has to have a communicatory aspect. Now, his reasons for feeling this way are, of course, different from theirs. But the interesting thing is that despite the matters in which he has such disagreement, as he does with them, on this very important question, there is, as I say, this strange community of viewpoints. I think I understand somewhat the reason for this. There was, as you know, in the early part of his career, a period in which he was taken up by the nobility and even the royalty of his time. But part of his greatness was the fact that he never lost his identification with the poor man, with what we so miscall the common man, because to me, the common man is the most uncommon creature on this earth. The common man to Casals has always been a center of his thought. And in the late 1920s, he conceived of an idea which was not only paradoxical, you might say, or in contrast to that relationship he had with the nobility, but which also was, in a way, in conflict with the attitude that has been long exercised toward the arts in most countries, in which the arts have been considered more or less the province of the ruling classes. This was completely contrary to Don Pablo's concept of what music should be. He wanted to have music heard by poor people, and he wanted to have music played by poor people. He was much more interested in music reaching the ordinary working man than he was in having music reach the members of Alfonso's court. And he organized one of the most remarkable movements that has ever been organized at any time. It was called the Workingmen's Concert Association. To belong to the association, by the way, you didn't have to be a trade union member. The unions were very powerful in Spain. But you did have to be a man who did not make more than a certain amount of money each year. And it cost you approximately $1 a year, I think, to be a member of the organization and to attend all the performances which were held under its auspices. Now, branches of that concert organization sprang up all over Catalonia during the ensuing years. The Workingmen's Concert Association had its own publication too, for example. It was called Fruición. And amazing articles published therein by workers themselves about music. In fact, from a dozen countries, those most interested in music came to see this phenomenon because nothing like it had ever existed before. And in the end, there were tens of thousands, literally, members of that association who had orchestras in different towns in Spain. And as he himself once said to me, he said, if I'd wanted to make a revolution using only the members of the association, we could doubtless have seized power.